Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at theelmstreetgroup@morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. If you live in a state as forested as New Hampshire, it's not out of the question that you'll see a bear from time to time. Recently, several bears in the town of Hanover were relocated to the North Country after getting into someone's home. These bears had begun to associate people with food and were unafraid of people, which poses a safety risk. The bears had been slated for destruction, but Governor Sununu intervened. Today on the program, bears, wildlife, and people, and how we all try to coexist. What are your thoughts on these Hanover bears? How does the governor's push to move them sit with you? And what about the policy of destroying bears that become too used to food with people? Let's talk. You can call into The Exchange at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange, all one word. We've got some smart folks here today talking about this, helping us unpack it all. Dave Anderson is Director of Education for the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and he's one of the hosts of NHPR's Something Wild. Hi, Dave. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you, Peter.
Pete Pekins is UNH Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Chair of the Department of Natural Resources. He has been the lead investigator on seven New Hampshire bear research projects in the past couple of decades. Pete, welcome.
Nice to be here, Peter.
And John Gregg, news editor of the Valley News in West Lebanon, joins us by phone. The Valley News, of course, has been covering the situation with the bears in Hanover. John, welcome.
Hi, Peter.
So, John, we're going to tap you in just a moment for a little background on these Hanover bears. The Valley News has done a great job covering these bears. But first, let's get a little bit of what's happened most recently with regards to these Hanover bears. Andy Timmons, New Hampshire Fish and Game Bear Project leader, has been the leading expert voice in the state in articles recently, and he was the one who initially said the bears had to be destroyed.
These bears have really been, in my opinion, destroyed by the residents of Hanover with an abundance of human-related foods that have been made available to them, mostly in the form of bird feeders as well as garbage. And when bears start trying to enter homes or do enter homes, you know, that's kind of a tipping point for us as an agency. And if you ask any wildlife management agency in North America what they would do with bears that enter homes, the pretty uniform answer is those bears need to be destroyed.
That's Andy Timmons talking about policy managing bears that may be potentially dangerous. Those bears were not destroyed, but rather relocated to the North Country. We should add here that we did invite Andy Timmons to join the program, but Fish and Game Executive Director Glenn Normando said he would not allow Timmons to be here today. Normando told the Concord Monitor, quote, "It's become a major political issue that has got nothing to do with bears. We are just not commenting," end quote. The bears got political when Governor Chris Sununu intervened. There was a lot of passion. There was a petition made by those who wanted to save the bears. Here's what the governor said recently about the bears.
Every day is different, and as was noted, you know, some days you're trying to create a $12 billion budget, and some days you get to save some bears, right? And that's a really good thing. That's a really good thing. Oh, go ahead, cheer for the bears. It's not for me, thank God. We haven't saved them yet. We're looking for them. If you see any bears, by all means, let me know. Before a fishing game comes down, I'll take care of them. I'll take care of them.
That was, of course, before the bears were relocated to the North Country. So the bears were moved, but that was a problem long in the making. So let's talk with John Gregg of the Valley News about that. He's been covering these bears. John, when did these bears first become an issue?
Well, this particular family, Peter, propped up last summer and fall in Hanover. But to be clear, there certainly have been bears wandering around Hanover and Lebanon for a long time. There's some pretty wild areas near the Connecticut River. And in Hanover, there's something called Mink Brook, which runs into the Connecticut and is a nature preserve about, a 10-15 minute walk from the Dartmouth Green. So these bears, the sow had three cubs, and they became sort of bolder and bolder in the summer. There was a video taken in another part of town of some bear cubs playing in a backyard, one of them sort of pushing a rope swing. It's not absolutely certain that that was the same family. And then a dog was attacked. This certainly would be probably the same bears because it was in the most the most problem-plagued neighborhood in the fall and pretty seriously injured. So there was the occurrence of events seemed inevitable because things just kept getting a little more dire or a little more problematic with these bears. What happened, there was the drought last year, which pushed more bears into sort of human areas. There weren't as many berries and apples, so they were looking for other food sources. I think the bear population in both Vermont and New Hampshire is pretty healthy. There are about 6,000 bears in each state, I believe. And in January, just to sort of to illuminate those numbers, both states put out their bear harvest numbers. And if you can believe it, there were almost 1,600 bears harvested or shot in the two states, including almost 900 in New Hampshire, which was 34% above the five-year average. So there are a lot of bears out there.
And when these bears start appearing in residential neighborhoods near people's homes and whatnot, officials tend to sort of lump these into non-emergency and emergency encounters with bears. What's the difference between those? Well, how do officials distinguish?
Well, they said, and particularly in Hanover, there were a series of meetings and warnings and advisories. You know, if the bears are just sauntering down the street, which they tend to do, this family tended to do, you know, give them leeway. Don't call 911. They wanted people to call the non-emergency number and let, you know, police or fire officials know. But what was happening with this particular bear family is, you know, they issued a warning around March 3rd saying, secure your garbage. You know, they're coming out of hibernation. They're around. We did a story in mid-March. There had been several sightings. They reiterated the non-emergency number. Andy Timmons at that time told us, you know, look, this is an issue that's been years in the making. And then later in April, two of the cubs, which at this point are yearlings that are about to be sort of booted out of the family, two of them dislodged a screen on a home in a sort of entry to a kitchen area. They did not enter the house, but it was a pretty clear sign that they were getting even bolder. And then by mid-May, in fact, two of the yearlings did enter a house, which happened to have seven children in it, four kids who live there under the age of nine and three other children who are visiting. And as Forrest Hammond, the Vermont wildlife biologist, told us that, you know, when the bears enter a house, that's a red line, which is akin to what Timmons said earlier in your clip.
Right. So how do how do officials respond once that red line is crossed?
They told us that the plan would be they had tried other means, trying to get people to secure their trash, but it generally means the bears have to be destroyed or euthanized, and that was the plan was that they were going to trap them and do that. We reported that, and there was a backlash and an online petition, which was signed by about 10,000 people. Now, granted, that was had a global reach, you know, because of the internet. But the governor's office got a lot of calls. Governor Sununu said they were pretty much all one-sided in favor of sparing the bears. So he said ultimately, let's try to trap and relocate them. That would be the more humane thing to do, and then just explore alternatives if problems continue.
That petition circulated was created by someone named Nicole Cantlin, and we have some tape of her speaking about what she thought needed to happen with respect to these bears. Let's hear from her.
And it just really upset me because I felt like it wasn't the bears' fault, that it was the people's fault for not listening and not taking their trash in.
And that's not just been said by her, but by many people, right, that this is not a bear problem. This is a people problem. So then the governor intervened. What did people in Hanover have to say about the governor's intervention, John?
Well, some were okay with it, but others thought, this has reached a tipping point. Not just Hanover, but Jeff Woodburn, the North Country senator, said, hey, butt out. Governor Sununu, he said on a tweet, let the wildlife experts do their job. And it should be said that the situation is a little bit unique to Hanover in one regard, and that is that there's a large student population. And what the wildlife officials and town officials have said is a large part of the problem is bird feeders, which lots of towns have, but also there's off-campus housing where trash might be left out in dumpsters. I think suffice it to say that students might not be as fastidious about putting their trash out as, longtime residents of a town. So there's talk of really trying to encourage people to get bear-proof containers to hold trash, long-term.
Is there any push on the part of the college, Dartmouth College, to sort of educate the students about proper garbage management?
I think, they've talked about it a little bit, but I think, this is more so off-campus housing. So I think, the feeling is that that's where the issue is. So the responsibility might rest with landlords. But, you can't blame the bears on this. I mean, I think we all might like a slice of pizza in the morning out of a box if they could find it. And they were finding that sort of thing plenty.
Certainly, we've all had those days. Tell us about businesses. Are businesses bearing some responsibility, no pun intended, for managing the garbage in a way that doesn't attract bears?
They've tried. I mean, the bears were trapped near, I think it's a nursing home. There's video. We have video on our website that one of the fire department officials shot of two of the yearlings in a dumpster sort of snorkeling away. They look like my neighbor's pigs. And then they stood up, and one of them comes right close to the guy, no fear of them whatsoever. The businesses have said we've tried to contain them, but, I think it looked like maybe that was a plastic top. They don't have them locked down like you might have, say, at a Yosemite.
There's talk also, John, that this story with these particular bears who have moved is not over, in part because bears tend to want to return to the place they were removed from. Are people in Hanover concerned about that?
I think that there's a possibility. Certainly the sow is still probably around. She may be in the Lebanon area as well. It's starting to be breeding season. So the broader concern is, when she has another family of cubs, she's so habituated that she'll bring them back to that neighborhood and say, have at it with the food that's here.
John Gregg of the Valley News. Thank you very much, John. We appreciate your insights.
Thanks, Peter.
And by the way, we do have links to Valley News articles about these Hanover bears at our website, as well as that video that John just mentioned. That's at our website, too, nhpr.org. Take a look at that. So before we go any further on this conversation, we've got Dave Anderson and Pete Pekins here. Tell us, because we're using some terms, right? Sow, cub, yearling. Dave, can you sort out this glossary of terms for us? What is what?
So bears will breed every other year, Peter. So the female sow, just like a pig, is female's a sow, a male is a boar, and the female will give birth in her den in midwinter, generally at the end of January, every other year. And she keeps her cubs with her the first year, and then they will re-den up with her the second winter. And the following spring, they emerge as yearlings. They look like adolescents. They're not quite full grown, but they're certainly not cute little cubs. And then they will disperse, and she's prepared to breed again the subsequent June. So every other year, she's receptive. And they live in a small matriarchal territory of maybe 5 or 10 square miles. They live in a matriarchal society with the females sort of control access to food within their territory, and they're familiar with adjacent females. And then you've got these wandering dominant boars that will come through in May and June to breed as many females in the harem as possible. And that's when the young adolescent yearling males are getting kicked out and are in danger from wandering boars.
Okay, thank you for that, Dave. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today we are talking about human-bear interaction. We're prompted by the recent news of several bears slated for destruction being relocated instead of destruction to the North Country. But our discussion will expand to include the principles behind human coexistence with these animals. What is your take on bear management? On human responsibility to create a safe habitat for both humans and bears. The number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org, or you can post your comment to our Facebook page at nhpr.org. So we've got the possibility of these bears coming back. In your experience, Dave, how likely is that these bears are going to try and come back?
Well, actually, Pete Pekins is with us, and he's got some data on what's been done in New Hampshire with the success of relocating bears.
All right, Pete, tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, so approximately 8 years ago, we, in conjunction with the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department, when they did translocate bears, we placed radio collars on these bears to determine one, their survival, and two, where they ended up. And we subsequently went back and removed their radio collars when they went to den. And surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, what we found were 60% of adults actually homed back to the capture site. The yearlings, which would be these bears in Hanover, were less prone to do that, but they moved very long distances. And bears that were habituated with human-associated food, many of those ended up in that behavior again. We had bears end up in Quebec, in Maine, and in other communities in New Hampshire. It does appear as if adults have much greater homing ability to return, and that may just be because yearling bears don't really have a set home range yet. That's exactly what they were going to do when they get kicked out by the mother. But all these bears have become food conditioned, and, you know, that's the real issue. So translocation solves the local problem, but until you solve that food problem, you probably are going to have the issue again. Because, as you said earlier, there's plenty of bears in New Hampshire.
So it solves one local problem, but perhaps creates a local problem somewhere else.
Yes. And another study we did is we actually ran a large survey through northern New Hampshire, and we asked residents their opinions about bear management, about these kind of issues and their choices and how to manage these problems. And not surprisingly, translocation was the number one choice, even for bears entering homes, and that surprised us. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, nobody wants to be the bad guy in this.
Bad guy being the guy who kills the bears.
Right.
Okay.
But it is a red line in most states, and in my opinion, for very good reason, because these bears are now very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm. We've got some listener comment along these lines. We're hearing from Rick in Berlin by email, who says, "I feel the governor was completely inappropriate in overriding Fish and Game. Andy Timmons knows his job. Let him do it. If any of those bears end up in my house or camp, I will shoot them." So that's Rick in Berlin. And state law, I believe, says that he has a right to shoot the bear because state law says you have a right to protect your property.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we are talking about bears today, specifically human and bear interaction. We're also talking about those bears from Hanover and bear management policy. When does it make sense to kill a bear? And where do we draw that line? And what does that line say about us as a society? The number to call to weigh in is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We're getting comments on Facebook as well. Selma commented on Facebook, perhaps the people who intentionally left up bird feeders and were feeding the bears should have paid to have them relocated instead of the average taxpayer. How about a ban on bird feeders and intentionally feeding wildlife during spring and summer months? That's a comment from Selma on Facebook, and we want to hear from you. Again, the phone number, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange. I'm Peter Biello, and we will be right back.
Okay, so how do trees fare in times of drought?
Well, it depends on the tree type.
This week on Something Wild, Chris and Dave get some professional help.
Climate change forecasts suggest that in the future, Although we'll likely experience more total rainfall, we're also expected to see more frequent and severe droughts.
Don't miss this week's or any week's story. Subscribe to NHPR's Something Wild wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy. And today, we're discussing bears. Specifically, what happens when bears stop being afraid of humans and start thinking of our homes, garages, and trash barrels as reliable sources of food? And we want to hear from you about this. What's been your experience with bears? What do you think of the state's policy, the state's approach to bears that become so-called nuisance bears? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We're speaking today with Pete Pekins. He's UNH professor of wildlife ecology and chair of the Department of Natural Resources. He has been the lead investigator on 7 New Hampshire bear research projects in the past couple of decades. And we're also joined by Dave Anderson. He's director of education for the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. He's also a familiar voice here on NHPR, one of the hosts of Something Wild. And we've got a lot of calls to get to. Stay with us, callers. We'll be right with you in just a moment. I want to ask Pete Pekins to put this into perspective for us because, you know, small number of bears, small number of people in the Hanover area, huge controversy, but most bears, not a problem.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that a few people or a few businesses and a few bears can cause a major issue in one community. And the vast majority of bears aren't in this type of behavior. And most bears can be trained to negate their nuisance behavior. You know, they can be trained to leave. But this sow seems very special in that, you know, there were many attempts by the state to try and use aversive behavior with her aversive conditioning, and it just didn't work. And that shouldn't be surprising. That's like thinking of everybody's own, that real stubborn dog that's very difficult to train. And this is free food, and she's trying to raise these cubs. So, again, in this case, it was a, you know, it's one family of bears. It's not every bear around Hanover coming into town.
Right, Dave?
I mean, there was a situation in Jackson 2 years ago where there was a sow with 4 cubs, and they would dub the Jackson 5. The bears that have access to human foods, dumpsters, garbage, pet food bowls, bird feeders have larger litters of cubs because their nutritional status is higher. And then it becomes a self-perpetuating problem because in order to feed 4 or 5 cubs as opposed to naturally 2 or 3 cubs, she's reliant and teaches her cubs to be reliant on human food sources. So in this interface between suburban and urban areas and the wild forests of New Hampshire is where these problems reoccur. And access to food is actually creating larger litters of cubs, which are almost predestined to perpetuate the cycle.
How do wildlife biologists go about retraining these wild bears into being more afraid of humans or being reluctant to go after the food that might be near places humans live?
Well, the first step is really to speak with the landowners of the residents or the business owners where these bears are attracted to. And you know, the most obvious thing is to remove the attractant. And that's the first step. And usually you can get people to – you can persuade people to change their behavior. And if we change human behavior, we can change bear behavior. Education is part of that. If you have livestock, say chickens and so forth, there's electric fencing that can be used to deter bears. And then lastly, there's absolute physical hazing. There are, pyrotechnics once in a while. Rubber bullets are used and so forth. So there's many, many attempts to try and solve this problem in a non-lethal manner. And the choice to lethally remove a bear is absolutely the last choice.
Nobody wants that unless it's absolutely necessary. We got this comment from Corrine on Facebook who says, I live near Broken Ground School, 7 minutes from the State House in Concord. We had a bear steal our bird feeders this spring. It's amazing how close they are. Indeed, they can be close. And let's talk to Frank in Jackson. Frank, thank you very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. I'm very familiar with the Jackson 5. So what we need to realize and understand is that with bears, it's about adaptability. Like anything else in wildlife, their essence is survival. And as citizens or of a community, it's our responsibility to actually understand and take care of our own backyard so it doesn't engage with bear activity. But there does become a fine line where I think that we have to understand, no matter to what extreme we go to, that when it does become a threat to us as an individual or our children or so forth, that every means needs to be taken as an opportunity to realize that we need to either mitigate the situation. And when it comes to a point where it's the point of having to extract the bear, you try everything possible and then have to go to that extreme, unfortunately, but that's reality.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Pete, Dave, your thoughts on Frank's comments?
Well, first I'd say that understand that New Hampshire is 84% forested. We're the second most forested state in the nation by land area. And many biologists, Ben Killam, the bear expert up in Lyme, has said that bears are supremely adapted to forests. They are intrinsically a forest creature. They're adapted for digging and climbing, and they can live well in a forest. This is a time of year of food scarcity. I mean, they're digging up jack-in-the-pulpit roots. The insects aren't quite as available. There's certainly no summer fruits. And autumn is when they fatten on beech nuts and acorns. And in the years of scarcity of mass crops in the forest, they'll go to corn and apples. So they move around seasonally in response to food sources. That gets disrupted with people. We do have a highly regulated managed bear season that Fish and Game administers every September. And last year, as John Gregg said, they harvested 898 bears in New Hampshire. The estimated population is about 6,100 bears. According to Andy Timmons, the goal for New Hampshire is about half a bear per square mile. And New Hampshire has about 9,062 square miles at a land area of 5.8 million acres. That would translate into about 4,500 bears statewide, and we have about 6,100 bears. And those bears that are harvested every year, last year nearly 900 bears, didn't elicit the kind of emotional response that these three Hanover bears did with 10,000 signatures and the intervention of politicians and people posting social media photos. So there's two parallel stories. One is bears and bear management, and the other is people and people management. People seem to agree people are the problem, and maybe there's some guilt on our part, but people disagree with what the solution should be long term.
Certainly a philosophical question, a deep one, in fact. When is it okay to kill a bear? Is it ever okay to kill a bear? I'm not sure we have the answer to that question today, but we do kill them periodically for population control, for hunting, for sport. But suddenly, when they become dangerous, it could become a political football. Let's talk to Judy in Wolfboro. Judy, thank you very much for calling. Judy, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Judy. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I had a couple of questions about the cubs.
Okay,
now,
go ahead.
Normally, I consider myself an animal rights person, but how remote an area were they placed in?
Okay, so the question from Judy is, where were the cubs placed? And, gentlemen, is there any chance that these cubs are going to be monitored? Pete?
I believe that cubs were ear tagged. They do not have radios on them. If they show up, the colored ear tags may help to identify them. But I want to combine her question with a couple of comments ago. And what's clear is that everybody in New Hampshire lives near bears.
Mm-hmm.
And so conflicts are inevitable. And it is about people understanding how to live with bears and reduce conflicts. Even in northern New Hampshire, the longest distance between anywhere you might release a bear and humans is about 30 miles. Hmm. And that's nothing to a bear to travel, particularly if you're put down in a strange place. And we know from our radio-collared animals that in that first week, they move many, many miles. And they're basically searching for something that's a little more comfortable.
We've got a question here from Karen, who asks regarding bird feeders, which bears really love. Does the bear smell the feeder, or do they just happen to find it and remember, oh, there's a bird feeder here, I'm going to keep coming back to this one?
Oh, bears can smell in Technicolor. I mean, I have seen postings online of bears digging in the wall of a barn to get at chickens inside of a barn because they can smell them in there. So they are definitely smelling food sources. They're not, their eyesight isn't that great. Their memory of the landscape is profound, but they are certainly really adept.
Let's talk to John in Bridgewater, who raises chickens and has some questions about that. John, thank you very much for calling. John, are you there? Oh, we've lost John. Let's talk to Jen in Concord. Jen, what's your question or comment? Okay, we don't have Jen as well. So these bears, they're good at smelling, not quite good at seeing. They're able to track down food. How does their memory of a good food location last forever?
I think, you know, I'm not a bear expert by any means, but I've learned a lot from talking with Ben Killam, who's rehabilitated cubs and has raised cubs up there and has a lot of experience. He actually talked about food sharing resources and cooperation between adjacent females in their territories. So they have a knowledge of their own territory, but also adjacent territories. This is the time of year when a sow can go on walkabout with a male boar and actually do a little shopping for adjacent real estate and remember those food resources. If food becomes scarce in a subsequent year in her home range, she may move to that territory and be allowed to do so by the resident female. So there's some altruism and cooperation among adjacent females and territories.
Let's go to Rick and Raymond. Rick, what's your question or comment?
I just want to let you guys know that I'm a beekeeper, and in our community, in the beekeeping community, you're taught that you have to protect your hives from the bear with an electric fence. And the electric fence is about, you can get a solar one or you can run one off your house, but they range anywhere from about $100 to $250 in cost. And that sort of mitigates the problem. I've been attacked 6 times by the bear, and, you know, it's on me that I did not have an electric fence at that time. So now I do have one, and that's how I protect my property.
So Pete, electric fence effective?
Yes, and you know, it's a great comment. And basically, the fence just removed the attractant, even though, you know, he's still raising his bees. And for most livestock situations or agricultural situations, electric fencing is the answer. It's important to remember that most of these foods are just ice cream foods to bears. This is just really easy eating. And if you deter them, there's plenty of natural forage out there. It's not an issue that we do not have good bear habitat. So it is about humans accepting responsibility of reducing attractants.
Mm. So bears aren't normally eaters of meat.
They're not. Unlike the Outdoor Life magazine covers of the big ferocious bears attacking other animals. In New Hampshire, it's pretty much limited to probably some big males or take a few moose calves in the first week of life and a few white-tailed deer fawns. But other than that, it's pretty minimal.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Sean in Jaffrey. Sean, thank you very much for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that the bottom line here is the responsibility of the public, and that, you know, our wildlife people spend their whole lives learning the biology of the woods, and they know what they're doing. And we got to, you know, I've heard of people that are feeding bears jelly donuts, and you can't do this, you know. I take care of 1,000 acres down here in Jaffrey, and I've got every kind of wildlife you can imagine. And I've lived here my whole life, and I see species now that have been extinct and gone from here that are here now. And it's their woods, you know. And, you know, you get these people that are nice, cuddly cub bear, and they look adorable. But leave them alone, because you're just going to ruin their life by getting in. So I wholeheartedly, you know, respect the wildlife people that are working. They do an outstanding job. The governor is, you know, he's trying to appeal to people who don't understand. And I just, you know, these people know what they're doing. So that's all.
Well, Sean, thank you very much. Sean, giving a shout out to the wildlife officials who study this stuff for a living. Some nodding of heads here at the table. Dave, something about his comments resonated with you.
Well, what I find interesting is the role of the internet and also the posting of social media photos. And it seems like a really good backyard cute bear photo that appears on statewide television or goes viral on social media or Facebook, you know, creates, you know, it's as yummy to people as black oil sunflower seeds are to bears. And people love to see backyard bears. They love to share their photos. And I've seen those posts go viral. And I admit that I've trolled for bear photos among my neighbors. I hear about people in my town who are near me who are posting, you know, their bear videos and photos. And so we react with natural curiosity. And people like seeing bears, but they shouldn't be doing that, as everybody's agreed, at the expense of, you know, the behaviors of the bears in the neighborhood.
To what extent is that a problem? People actually feeding bears because they want to see the bears? Pete?
Well, I would like to believe that that's not a huge issue. I'm sure it happens. But most of the conflicts are associated with, you know, nothing purposeful. It's just really humans being a little bit lazy and altering human behavior about reducing these attractants. I would like to say, you know, there are a few communities in New Hampshire that have taken a very proactive approach by enacting wildlife ordinances. And these ordinances actually tell the residents how you can handle your garbage. And it's all about reducing conflicts with bears. And we surveyed these people in these towns, and it was amazing to learn the support of residents for these ordinances and their belief that these ordinances do work. And we actually have data out of the town of Lincoln that indicated more than a 50% drop in the conflict rate in that town due to just people following the rules about how to handle garbage. There was 90% compliance rate by residents, which is really outstanding. That's higher than a recycling rate in any community. But on the other hand, there was only 30% compliance rate by commercial ownerships. And again, the video of these bears, those are in dumpsters that are not bear-proof. And, you know, there's nothing a bear can't get into unless you deter them from it. So it will take some monetary investment for companies to prevent this kind of situation. But that's one way to kind of push the issue as a community is through an ordinance.
Mm-hmm. And do towns sort of feel compelled, if they have a neighboring town with a stronger ordinance, to also enact an ordinance like that to keep the bears from just simply migrating to a less strict town?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's our training of other humans versus training of bears.
It always seems to come back to not being a bear problem, being a human problem, right?
Yeah.
Begs the question, would a state law make sense on garbage management for the sake of keeping bears out of people's garbage?
I think that would slow Concord up quite a bit, kind of debating that. It's a local issue, and it really, you know, you don't need an ordinance usually. I mean, again, it's usually a few people or a few establishments causing the majority of issues in any community.
Mm-hmm. Dave, you agree? Don't need an ordinance?
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that kind of flies in the face of the way that it's been going in terms of educating people. And as Pete just said, there's like a tremendous increase in compliance. I think we have to also remember how fortunate we are to be able to have this debate. And it's an emotional debate. But the ability to have a state where we've got a resident population of some, you know, 1.2, 1.3 million people and 6,100 bears, you can almost predict where conflicts are going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're talking about bears and humans and how we interact today on The Exchange. In just a few minutes, we'll take a look at more of the responsibilities we humans have in preventing these bears from becoming dangerous. We also want to hear from you. What's your experience with bears? Have you seen them in your yard? Have you tried to feed them and now feel some sort of guilt over having done that now that you are an educated human being? Let us know. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange. This is The Exchange from NHPR. We'll be right back.
Ever been listening to NHPR's The Exchange when something interrupts?
What do other states allow? Do they say that is okay?
That's interesting.
Hey, Linda, the TPS reports are due in 15 minutes. And we need to go over the quarterly numbers.
Oh, okay.
You know, I gotta be honest.
Check out the Exchange podcast feed and never miss another fascinating discussion again. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy, and we are talking about humans and bears and the way we attempt to coexist. Recently, several bears that had lost their fear of people were relocated to the North Country instead of being put down, which was the recommendation of wildlife experts. Have you had bears in or near your home? What do you think the state should do or towns should do once bears lose their fear of humans? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Again, that's 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We're speaking with Dave Anderson. He's Director of Education for the Society of the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and he's one of the hosts of NHPR's Something Wild. And Pete Pekins is UNH Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Chair of the Department of Natural Resources. He has been the lead investigator on several New Hampshire bear research projects over the past few decades. And we're getting a call today about dogs. John in Bridgewater has a question about dogs and what they do with bears. John, thank you very much for calling.
Hello.
Hi, John. Thank
you very much. I'm from Bridgewater, New Hampshire, and I raise chickens, ducks, and rabbits. And I get bears all the time. And I've got permission to shoot them on my property, but I don't want to. They're so smart. They can unlock cage doors and I totally agree with you on the electric fence. But bears don't smell electric fences. And if you really want to be proactive, you get a dog. And I've got a lab, and I have dogs off and on. And they will not come in. When you have a dog in an area that, especially when we defecate around the cages and one bark, and they're gone because they get hunted by dogs, and they know what that is.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much, John, for calling in. Your phone line wasn't that great. So John's story, if folks had trouble hearing, he raises several kinds of animals, and he agrees somewhat with the idea that an electric fence can protect them, but a dog is one of the best deterrents or protections against bears trying to get in. Both of you have opinions about this. Let's start with you, Pete. What do you think?
Yeah, I think John's right. And what it really speaks to is that, you know, this is just the bear doesn't need this food. So, you know, anything that's a deterrent, the bear tends to turn around. I will offer, though, that the few instances that you hear about people think there's a, you know, really a personal encounter with a bear, typically it's when you're walking with your dog and you get between a sow and a cub. So that's one time when a dog isn't a deterrent, it kind of gets the sow riled up. But I think for around your home, I think he's exactly right, because the barking is just, you know, the bear doesn't need that food. It's so it does act as a legitimate deterrent.
Dave, do you agree? Is a dog a deterrent?
I think bears really dislike dogs, and they use actually dogs to track bears and hunt bears during bear hunting season. There are houndsmen who have trained dogs. They're plot hounds. Given the opportunity, a bear is going to de-escalate and move. So giving them space and giving them an exit, they will opt to get away from people and dogs. In fact, my encounters with bears have always been I'll back off, they back off, and we go our separate ways. I've never encountered an aggressive a bear or felt threatened. I think dogs escalate the threat and escalate the situation. Having a dog there changes the dynamic in favor of the people, and that puts the bear in an uncomfortable position. And as you said, if they separate sows from cubs, Pete, that's a problem.
Yeah, and that's pretty rare.
Yeah. So, Dave, you've never had an encounter with a bear while you were also with a dog?
I've not.
No. Okay. But your encounters with bears, were they in the wilderness? Were they in a residential area?
In the backyard, at the apple orchard, just, you know, in the woods. And in every case, what a thrill to see a bear. I mean, if I see a squirrel on my porch, I don't go tell everybody at work about it for a week. When I see a bear, I find myself telling people, what a great day. I saw a bear today. It's a great indicator of environmental quality in New Hampshire that we have ample habitat to support a population of black bears in New Hampshire.
I'm getting all curious now about your experience. How close did you get to this bear, Dave?
I've been close to bears, and in almost every case I've learned, they see you, you see them, back off, appease them, give them space, and they don't want to have anything to do with me or what I'm up to. As long as they know I'm there, it's good. I'm good, they're good.
Okay. Again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And let's talk to Skip in Stratford. Skip, thank you very much for calling.
Good morning. Just two two thoughts. One, I don't agree with the fact that the bears were moved. I think we should have done what the wildlife experts had wanted to do. I think we could have just given them somebody else, their problem, the bears' problem. And second of all, my wife and I had fed the birds for many years at our house. We had 6 acres in Stratford. It's very, very rural. And we had to stop feeding them because one night a bear came up on the deck. It was late afternoon, actually. Took one of the, ripped one of the bird feeders down, destroyed it, and then came back the next night for the second one. And it just stared at my wife through the sliding glass door. Wasn't afraid at all. And so after that, just about 7 or 8 years ago, we finally stopped feeding the birds.
So once again, another story of bears coming back to the same location again and again because they know they can reliably find a source of food. Pete, a familiar story for you.
Yeah, listen, the bears learn. They do remember. It's like you remembering your favorite ice cream shop. I mean, to think that it's random, I think it's just not random. It's usually the same animals. And again, you can feed birds. Nobody would ever suggest people can't feed birds. But, you put a time limit on it to remove the potential interaction with bears. And that's really all the state is asking people to do.
Yeah, generally Thanksgiving in November to about the end of March or maybe early March, depending on the weather, the bears have gone to den. And I feed birds all winter long, enjoy that, and just make sure that I take my bird feeders down as the snow is melting and natural food becomes available for birds as well.
Understood. Okay. Let's talk to Chris in Lebanon. Chris, thank you very much for calling.
Hi. I have a question. I'm worried about the relocation of these bears. I'm sure that they're relocated, remotely, but I'm worried about them. What's to say if my children, say I live out, away from town or whatever, and I have children in the backyard having a lunch. Are they worried about these cubs coming, possibly coming after children that are just because they're smelling the food?
Good question. Thank you very much for asking it. Dave's thrown his hands up, not sure. What do you think?
Dave's not taking this one.
Dave takes a hard pass on this. Okay. Pete, what do you think? I mean, the scenario.
The concern, obviously, everybody understands that concern. And, that I think is what drives the fish and game policy is that, these bears are having a very difficult time differentiating the humans that either they're, humans are okay or they're part bear or they're part human or whatever. I don't think that we're talking about attacking children, but there have been situations where certainly food associated with humans, that's bears are very brazen where they're allowed to get away with it. And that's the whole idea of the management protocols that are put in place is to try to knock this behavior back.
Mm-hmm. Anne wrote in with two questions that are actually relevant to what we're talking about right now. Any reports of bears attacking humans in New Hampshire?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. The only thing that remotely near that, again, is this situation a couple of times a year where you and your dog get between a sow and cubs. But the sow is really after the dog, not the person.
Gotcha. Okay. Second question from Anne regarding bird feeders. Dave, you mentioned taking them in. I mean, are we saying here that we should just never have bird feeders out at all in spring or summer? Just put them away? They're too much of a risk?
Yeah, I think so. And if you forget to take them in, the bear will give you a reminder in the middle of the night. I mean, black oil sunflower seeds are such a high calorie, and it's not that risky at 2 o'clock in the morning to go take a bird feeder for a black bear. They're aware of when people are not in the landscape, and they'll wait around till cover of darkness. But there's just so much nutrition and calories in black oil sunflower seeds.
Let's talk to Brian in Bedford. Brian, thank you very much for calling.
How are you doing today? It's just ironic that you guys are talking about bears, only because I had this bizarre bear encounter on Sunday afternoon. Just a quick story is I was walking my dog through my neighborhood, which is a pretty densely crowded area. It's not really far apart homes. And as I'm walking, within 30 feet, there was a huge black bear. And literally, while I was walking normal, like on all four legs, it must have stood about 5 feet tall. And I got alarmed, but for some reason, I walked around. I had my dog, so I was walking, and then I walked down a cross street, and in the direction that I saw the bear traveling, I warned neighbors, that had, I heard kids playing in the backyard in a pool, having a pool party, and that guy just didn't seem to even care. Like, he knew that the bear was crossing. He told us where it lived and where it goes. And here I am thinking, should I call the police? Should I call animal control? And this guy just seemed to, like, be very passive about it. And I just didn't know, is that the normal reaction? I mean, when you see a bear like that caught walking through neighborhoods, is that something you would normally call animal control for?
I mean, some people who are not familiar with it do that. In our neighborhood, it's just sort of like a social media post or, you know, my daughter was running on a road and the local folks said, hey, just so you know, there's a bear half mile down the road. It's just kind of like acknowledge, like, just be aware there's a bear. This is the time of year when bear reports spike, so it's certainly not a 911 call emergency services kind of thing. Fish and Game's not going to respond to every report of a bear walking down a road. There was a bear on Main Street in Bradford right at the bank hammering on a bird feeder last Friday afternoon. There was a bear knocking out bluebird feeders to get at tiny little bluebird eggs last week, not far from where I live. This is the time of year when not only are the boars wandering in search of available females that are coming into estrus, but those sows have driven off their yearling cubs who are now dispersing in the landscape. And every year there's a spike in reports and photos and videos appearing on television of bears in late May and early June. And by the 1st of July, everybody sort of forgets about bear breeding season.
We got a comment from Erica on Facebook who says, people have to change their behaviors and be held accountable when they do not. Why, Erica asks, should bears be killed or relocated due to people's laziness or lack of care, concern, action? Bears do not know better. People do. Bears get in a house? How? How were bears just able to stroll into a house? Not sure that's exactly what happened, but Erica continues, that does not just happen, and it should not just be a red line for bears. There's a red line for us, and we should do better by the wildlife we share territory with in this area. So Erica pointing the finger at people once again. Something we've heard about time and time again. But what about that? I mean, why should bears, to her question, why should bears have to suffer for a lack of human stewardship of their area?
Yeah, I mean, it's an understandable comment. And again, I would say that everybody involved in this believes that. But at some level, you have to be concerned about an habituated animal that really is not acting normally. And that was the concern with these animals. It is not normal for a bear to try to get into a home. And once they get in, they're going to continue to try to get into homes. That is the fear. And, you know, any type of accident or injury is what people are worried about. So, but she's right. I mean, I don't blame the homeowner for the bear going in their home, but it is a cadre of people or businesses that have created this problem in Hanover, then, as the town manager explained to us.
Mm-hmm. Of course, some of the research suggests that while relocating they may seem to be the more humane location, in fact, about a third of the bears that are relocated don't survive. This is part of the research. Pete, you've done some research where the percentage is less than a third, but still, it's not a guarantee that when you move these bears, they're going to survive and have a happy life in their new location.
Well, you know, we call the technique translocation, and, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and it's Walt Disney out there and everybody gets along, and, you know, it's the farthest thing from the truth. You know, this is a tough life for these yearlings. They're going to bump into bears they don't know. They're going to be pushed around. When they see a home or a human habituation, they're used to that, and they're probably going to go investigate, you know, your residence. And over 50% of the bears that we radio collared that had been translocated, in fact, did partake in more nuisance behavior. Most were pushed away by people, you know, with aversive conditioning. But the fact of the matter is they were very comfortable in going back to human residences.
Carla in Berlin has a resident bear nearby. Carla, tell us about your bear.
Well, we figure he's about 250 pounds, and I live in the city of Berlin. He's been around the neighborhood for the last 2 months. Everybody around here is pretty good about putting their garbage out only when the city says to. In fact, we just got a notification with our tax bills about the about when we should and when we shouldn't put everything out and the fines or penalties for not doing it. And this guy has been around for a couple of years. He's no big deal. If he comes into my yard and my cats are out, my cats will puff themselves up and walk sideways and still generally leave. So, you know, you just kind of let them go and let them do what they want, but you keep everything else, everything that you can under control. Our bird feeders are in by the 1st of April. We don't put our garbage out. Most of us don't put our garbage out until the morning of when it's going to be picked up. And we just don't have that much of a problem. He's come into our yards. He's walked around the neighborhood, and he's walked down the street. But yeah. Then so have the moose and the deer.
Right. So a part of the community up there, in other words. Thank you very much, Carla. And Carla, when you mentioned that the town used the tax bill to sort of communicate good bear management policy to residents, there were some nods on the table here from Pete and Dave. Were those nods of approval, Pete?
Yes. It's communities being proactive. And, you know, the caller has learned to live with bears. And that is the goal of the state agency, and that's one of their pet lines, is learn to live with bears.
So coexistence is possible through human education, and that's the middle way, and that's the most promising way, because the stark choices are either translocating bears, who will get into trouble later, or destroying those bears, which overwhelmingly, Pete has taught me, people do not want to see. So the middle way to coexist is to educate ourselves like those communities of Lincoln and like the folks in Berlin are doing, and then they can appreciate the bears that they have.
It's on us, the human, the rational thinkers, to change our behavior, to manage the animal behavior.
Yep.
Well, Dave Anderson, Director of Education for the Society of the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
And Pete Pekins, UNH Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Chair of the Department of Natural Resources, thank you very much, Pete, for being here and sharing your insight.
Always willing to help out.
And remember, this conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our volunteers, Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Edie Allard. And our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy, who will be back with you tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.